And by the chance, we'll go ahead and get the meeting started. I'd like to welcome everybody to the meeting. First item on the agenda is the election of the committee chair and vice chair. At this point, I'll open the floor for nominations for anybody with first name other than John Brown. Got a motion for Ron to be chair. Is there a second?
Second.
Is that motion a second? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Congratulations.
Thank you.
You need to do a motion for vice chair. Do you have a motion for a vice chairperson?
Motion for myself.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Sure.
All in favor?
Aye.
Congratulations. So, I got one. Let's see here. We need approval of the prior meeting minutes. Do we have a motion to approve?
So, second.
Any discussion at all? Now, we have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes. Off the old business, project updates.
We got a lot of updates today, so starting off with the city of Evansville, Washington, Winebox intersection improvement. The Board of Public Works approved a restoration inspection contract with American Construction Corp. of December 11th. The project was supposed to be bid on February 4th. There's no bids below the engineer's estimate being received. NDOT will review the bid to determine if the low bid is eligible for award. On page 2, for the State Route 66 pedestrian overpass, your van, the project was posted for bids on December 10th, and the contract for construction was awarded to Blake Burger Construction, Inc. of Cincinnati, Indiana, for a low bid of $2,238,182.50. The pre-construction meeting is scheduled for February 9th. For the Evansville Vandenberg County sign inventory and replacement project, the sign installation portion of the project has been split into two phases, and the letting date has been pushed back to allow additional federal funds to be programmed. Phase 1 is currently scheduled for letting on July 8th of this year. For the T-Couple State Rock School project, the project was posted to bid on February 4th. There's no bid below the engineer's estimate being received. NDOT will review the bid to determine if the low bid is eligible for award. Moving on to page 3, for Vandenberg County, we have the Green River Road widening project in the north of Kansas Road. Construction continues with 73% of the project now complete. The contractor will continue removing old pavement and work on storm sewer installation. For the Bethel Road widening project, Green River Road to Oak Hill Road, the preliminary plans are close to being complete, and a public information meeting will be scheduled in the next 6 weeks to review and discuss the proposals. For the Green River Road project for Kansas to Winfield and Harmony Road, the Stage 2 design package was submitted to NDOT on January 25th for review and approval. Page 4 is carryover of the Cowan Ginberg, their State Rock School project. This project is now complete. For New Rose Rivertown Trail project, there was on property appraisals, but a required update to the environmental document has been completed and submitted for review. For page 5, which is NDOT State Road 61 connector in Moonville, this phase was posted for bids on December 10th, and the contract for construction was awarded to Blankenberger Brothers, Inc., also, for a low bid of $2,266,474.70. Page 6 which is a carryover of the city of Henderson Sand Lane State School Project. The bid package proposal and the LPA project development checklist has been submitted to KYT Center for review and approval. For KYTC, their Special Pre-51 Fine Road Project, the preliminary work will begin on February 2nd. The contract that is made currently set for August this year. The roadway will be closed approximately 4 to 5 months during construction, so a detour will be placed. For the U.S. Highway 41 project at Kentucky A-12 Airline Road, statewide consultant has been requested. And for the U.S. 50 project, Boxville Bridge, a preliminary line and grade meeting, which held February 2nd.
I'll just say the 41 Wolfhills also had their preliminary line grade.
Oh, yeah,
yes.
Okay.
Anyone else have any questions under other business? All right, I guess we'll move on to new business. Rob?
Yes, the Evans on the deal request approval of an MOA between the MPO, NDOT, KYTC, MET, and HART. This agreement is a requirement among agencies involved in the transportation planning process and defining roles and responsibilities of each agency.
Motion to strike the request in our vote for 3 minutes.
Yes.
Does anyone have any questions in regards to this? Seeing none, do we have a motion to approve?
I move to approve.
We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes. Next, Craig.
Fifth Amendment. We have one this month. Request from NDOT to add a I-64 HMA overlay for a maintenance project. You see here 3 miles east of State Road 65 to a half mile east of US 41, adding project for PD and Fiscal 16 for construction inspection. The cost of $80,000 and that is a 90% of the project.
We have to this resolution to approve.
Yeah, we do that. Yes.
Okay.
So,
do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Check modifications. We don't need a approval on this. This is just for your information. We had two that have been processed recently. The first was for the Henderson Riverfront Development Project. This is a high priority project for development of the Henderson Riverfront. Revised construction description estimate and schedule, non-highway land acquisition, master planning, and site improvements in fiscal 15. As you see there, $2,174,000 is the project cost. We have the 820 ATP funds and a global in-kind match. The second, also KYTC, US 60, wide open through US 60 from the west of Henderson Community College East to Texas 425, revised PE schedule to reflect $100,000 in fiscal 14 and $400,000 in fiscal 15. Total PE budget unchanged and still is funded from the federal STP program and Kentucky Toll Credit Match.
This is just for your information. Thank you, Craig. Last on the agenda is the update on the bicycle and pedestrian connectivity master plan.
Jack.
Yep.
Jack Stevie.
Hey guys, my name is Jack. I'm with All the Planning Design. We're a consultant team who's working with UPO stakeholders from out the city on the Evansville Bike Pedestrian Connectivity Master Plan. I'll get a copy. And it was sort of an effort almost a year
year ago, and have been working diligently with a lot of help from NPO, reaching out to the community, and, you know, reviewing existing conditions, making recommendations on the 5 E's that we do as we look at. It's kind of a national best practice for bike and pedestrian planning, looking at engineering, evaluation planning, education, encouragement, and enforcement to kind of bring about that infrastructure change that's needed to improve bike and pedestrian conditions, but also bring about cultural change, making it normal activities for people to bike and walk to work, to school, to run errands, that sort of thing. Today we're just going to present kind of a broader overview of where the plan's headed. We hope to have a draft the next several weeks, and I think bring the next step is bringing to the council for adoption. Basically, with the planning effort is, with those planning efforts, it's kind of a big vision of what we want to see, what direction we want to see to go in. And after talking with several stakeholders, we crafted this vision based on the feedback we've heard. And the vision is that the transportation system in Evansville comfortably, safely, and efficiently facilitate bike and pedestrian transportation for users of all ages and abilities. And again, meeting, you know, kids going to school, meeting people going to work, low-income populations that this may be their only means of transportation, as well as the senior populations, providing them transportation options. These attractions will make the city a tri-state destination for bike and pedestrian activities. Not only, you know, benefiting the residents, but drawing in visitors. That's really one of the goals, making this a regional and maybe even national destination for people to come and enjoy the downtown, the amenities that Evansville has to offer. And ultimately, these changes will lead to healthier lives, smarter investments, and a better environment for the community as a whole. And kind of breaking this down further, the vision, a little bit, we picked five main objectives early on in the process. Connectivity, looking at, you know, what efforts have been done already and connecting into those efforts, bridging them together. Sustainability and evaluation, and really talking here about economic sustainability as well as environmental, as well as health improvements. And also evaluation, looking at national programs that can give Evansville recognition. There are several programs that we kind of base our evaluation on that the city can apply to, like bike-friendly community program, the walk-friendly community program, that businesses, that residents look at to see if communities have these awards, you know, when taking places to do. So these are important recognitions to be to look after as you achieve some of these goals in the plan. We want the plan to be implementable. It's a long-term vision, a kind of grandiose vision of what we want the city to look like, but we also break it down into implementable action steps, prioritizing rural voting group projects that have a big impact in going after this first. And it's really about safety, making it a safe environment for all users, and human and social health. I think, you know, one of the statistics that was a little bit scary to look at early on in the process was that, and this does have a little bit to do with the reporting of bike and pedestrian incidents, but 80-90% of bike and pedestrian crashes in Evansville that have resulted in injury. And so we're trying to look at ways how we can reduce that number. And on the group, I just want to take a minute to kind of showcase some of the benefits that, you know, these sorts of improvements can have on communities. I'm from Greenville, South Carolina. I grew up there. And this is what Main Street Greenville looked like in the 70s. And we was in Greenville made a tough decision. You know, there was pushback against decisions to reimagine how the downtown functioned and what kind of place it was back in the 70s. We brought in landscape architects and implemented what they thought would ultimately result in a better downtown. Now Greenville has one of the most iconic Main Streets really in the southeast. I mean, people from all over look to Greenville and come there for stuff to do, the region and the community. Same thing with Falls Park. It used to be a car bridge from where there, and the leaders were looking to tear it down. The people said it would cause crippling congestion downtown, there was a lot of pushback. But the leaders, you know, had the vision and went forward with it. Creating Falls Park, which is now a huge, you know, regional destination again, has brought a lot of investment to the community. And this is just highlighting a little bit of the benefit of this pad. The Swamp Rabbit Trail, which runs right through Falls Park, connects another tech community up north, has, the 3 years they've studied it, they found that a $6.7 million benefit from outside users, visitors, coming in and spending money along the trail. These are 500,000 users a year, and you know, that's not including the health benefits and other kinds of benefits. So, and these improvements really add the ability to transform communities along the way. So diving into the analysis and recommendation stage, we looked at several figures looking at the network, trying to identify pinch points in the existing network that we can connect and bridge together to make a more cohesive environment for diving along. We looked at demographics, equity, we looked at crash data to identify some of the high crash locations. Traffic, we looked at stress for bikes and pedestrians in the existing network. We looked at street network connectivity, trying to bridge some of those isolated groups of streets. And then we looked at destination origins, looking at where people, population centers are and where the main destinations are. We also did a real extensive public outreach process, owing a large part with help from NPO and key stakeholders. We had a project steering committee that was comprised of public and private interests, as well as advocacy groups that we met on a regular basis to keep abreast of what's going on with the plan. Also ran deliverables by them, got input from them. Went on a couple of bike rides to kind of explain some of the treatments you're thinking of in the plan and get feedback on those. We had an online website, still up, and an online mapping exercise. We raised over 1,000 responses on those alone. Here's a little bit of the feedback from that. The how important is improving walking and biking conditions at Evansville Grass shows that with that group that responded, there was overwhelming support for these sorts of improvements. We've had public input meetings. We had meetings Saturday along that we're doing, looking initially at getting input, now looking at presenting the initial recommendations and getting feedback on those. We were at Streets Alive, we were at farmers markets, and then one of the, I think, interesting pieces of this is we interviewed several focus groups around town. We interviewed the business community, the Parks Board, the Chamber of Commerce, and the health community around town to get their input on what kind of things they'd like to see in the town. And then, you know, we took all this to funnel it into our recommendations. And again, you know, looking at that that all ages and abilities approach, where, you know, on more high traffic volume, high speed streets, looking at more separation for bicyclists traveling on the streets to make them more comfortable, separating them from the traffic lanes a little bit more. And then also looking at lower volume shared streets that can be used to kind of bridge some areas of town, more running through kind of neighborhood areas. And this is just a kind of diagram showing what some of the treatment types we're looking at, explaining that concept, where this is a, right here, this is a shared street concept, which are sometimes referred to neighborhood greenways or bike boulevards, where, you know, it's basically just, it can be as simple as signage and pavement marking, move through neighborhoods, making low-volume connections for bicycles and benefiting the property owners and the pedestrians as well. It's moving on to more highly trafficked and high-speed streets. You want delineated facilities like bike lanes, buffered bike lanes, as shown here. We also looked at some of the more innovative facilities happening across the country, such as cycle tracks, which are typically separated by some sort of vertical separation, whether it be park cars in this case, vertical posts in this case, a curb is a barrier here, and even planters in some locations. So these are kind of the facility types we're looking at as we're making facility recommendations. On the pedestrian side, really looking, there's a great sidewalk network in Evansville already, and so really kind of trying to look at what the big pinch points and what the big areas are in the existing network and trying to bridge those key connections, you know, around schools, around work centers, around downtown, real key destinations, making sure that sidewalk's clear, you know, there are no obstructions on the sidewalks, making sure intersections are safe and up to standard. In some locations, looking at potential for mid-block crossings, because if you have to walk a quarter mile out of your way to get to an intersection, you get to a bus stop or, you know, a restaurant across the street, that really discourages walking. And then traffic calming, this is an example here of a bulb out, which, you know, slows, improves sight lines and slows traffic around areas such as schools where, you know, there's a high amount of pedestrian activity expected. And then we also looked at non-infrastructure recommendations, such as policy recommendations, such as education improvement and enforcement recommendations. Building on the existing efforts we have here, again, the walk friendly community, bike friendly community programs, safe routes to school, bike to work week, bike to work month. There are already a lot of great partners in town doing great things in terms of encouragement and education. And so, you know, making recommendations on how the city can continue working with those groups and supporting those groups, because it really takes, the city and its partners, advocates, the business community to make, you know, these sorts of improvements really happen. We have upgraded program, the CDC grants for some of the billboards that teach bicyclists how to ride, but also educate motorists that, you know, bicyclists are on the roadway. And then you extend that event, take a kid out like a day, great encouragement event. So in the decision making, we looked at several different factors in terms of planning the routes. We looked at pinch points in the networks, you know, opportunities to connect the transit, opportunities, you know, where we saw people, we saw gate pass, we saw people crossing in mid-blocks where, you know, there is that latent demand, people are using it, and maybe using it more if it's more safe, and so providing the facility for these key locations. And then looking at, you know, some existing facilities, like here on Weinbach, where you have, you know, obstructions in the sidewalk. You know, these people are walking okay, but maybe it could be more comfortable. Maybe somebody with ADA impairments, ADA accessibility issues might have difficulty traversing an area like that. And we came up with a core network that spans the whole city, and this is again the long-term vision of the core network, really emanating from downtown and connecting into a lot of the previous proposals for the city, and incorporating those into a new vision for the city. We looked at different kinds of facility types, like I was talking about, the shared lane environments, the bike lanes, buffer bike lanes, greenways, the side paths, and things like that. Now, we did the same with pedestrian facilities, going off of improvements that are here, really trying to bridge those gaps in the network. And then to the action plan part of it, taking this vision and kind of prioritizing it and making it digestible for the people who are going to be implementing it, which is an important part. And identifying, you know, those real low-hanging fruit, high-priority opportunities. And this is an example, and we're kind of working through this process right now. But some of the criteria we looked at were the supply and demand, whether it connects with an existing facility or lines up with a previous proposed project, and you know, safety improvements, and whether the public expressed interest in the particular project. And if you just get assigned points and the cumulative score, kind of gives us a good picture of what priorities, what projects rise to the top in terms of ease of implementation, but also benefit. And we developed a top 10 list already of the projects, you know, working with the NPO, working with the stakeholder groups, projects that really have a lot of momentum already that we can kind of build upon and use this to create our, you know, our initial core network that the city can use to build off of in the future. And as you can see, it includes bike improvements, it includes intersection improvements for pedestrians. So we try to, you know, come up with a good mix of projects, project types, and populations that they would attract. And to help visualize some of these improvements, we've done a few of these photo simulations to kind of show, you know, how these improvements might work. Here's Walnut Street, for example, looking at potential road diet. Walnut Street was really identified early on as a key corridor because it connects to downtown from the university and gets a lot of traffic, bike traffic already. And so trying to make that, you know, more safe environment for people, you know, getting to and from downtown, you know, and still facilitating the car traffic. The nice thing about Walnut is you have the parallel facility on LinkedIn that, you know, can be used. It would certainly reduce car volumes on Walnut. They're already pretty low initially, but there's a lot of space that can offset that that reduction in capacity for cars. And you're adding capacity for bicycles on the board as well. Another example, MLK, right through the heart of downtown, a real kind of showcase street in the city. I mean, you come in the city, it was the first thing you see. If it had more bike and pedestrian friendly feel to it, you know, it may improve the life on the street and the activity and the face of the downtown. You know, could possibly even, these are just visualizations and kind of these have not been, these are planning level visualizations, and so, you know, a lot of details have to get worked out in any way to get out with these ideas for the city moves forward with the plan. So that's about it. If you have any questions specifically, you want to go back to anything, happy to field up and discuss anything.
Do you have any questions? Comments? Thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
All right, do we have any public comments? Anyone? All right, so we're on. I'm moving to adjourn.